All right, so we're diving deep today into a pretty fascinating legal battle, Chau v. Lewis.
Yeah, this one is a big one.
And I think a lot of our listeners probably recognize the name Michael Lewis.
Oh, absolutely. He's the author who really brought the 2008 financial crisis to life. I mean, especially in The Big Short.
Yeah, The Big Short, that book, so many people read that. And this case isn't just about a book, right? It's really about where we draw the line between hard-hitting journalism, financial journalism, and when it crosses over into potentially harming someone's reputation.
Yeah, it's that classic tension, right? Free speech, holding powerful people accountable, but also, what about individual rights, protecting your name, your reputation? It's a tough one.
It is. And we're specifically looking at this case where Wing F. Chau, who is a CDO manager, sued Lewis over the way he was portrayed in the book, and particularly in this chapter. It's kind of a memorable one, Spider-Man at the Venetian. So this is kind of your crash course into how defamation law works, how it bumps up against the First Amendment, and well, what happens when you take on Wall Street with a book?
Yeah, and especially a book like The Big Short, which was so widely read,
Right.
right? It really shaped how people understood the whole financial crisis. So when somebody says, "Hey, wait a minute, that's not really fair, that's not really accurate," it's kind of a big deal.
It is, and the sources we've got for you on this deep dive really break down Chau's role in managing CDOs. Like, he was right in the thick of it all in the years leading up to the crisis. And then we see how Lewis, in his very, distinctive style, really kind of paints a picture.
Yes, a very vivid picture.
Yeah, vivid's a good word. I mean, we're going to get into specifics, but he calls Chau a fool. He calls him the pilot of the ship of doom.
Right.
And then there's this assertion that Chau basically sold everything out.
Right.
So we're going to try to understand why the court ultimately sided with Michael Lewis, which is a big deal for freedom of speech, but we also want to understand, what was the dissenting judge seeing? Because there was one judge who really saw this whole thing very differently.
Yeah, and I think it's important to remember too, this whole thing didn't just come out of nowhere, right?
Yeah.
This lawsuit came after this massive period of financial instability. People were angry, they were looking for answers, and The Big Short really gave a lot of people a way to understand what happened. So it's natural that, if you were in that book and you felt like you were portrayed unfairly, you might push back. And the question is, where is that line?
Right. So let's get into some of the details. So Wing Chau, as we said, he was deep in the world of CDOs before 2008. For those of us like me who don't think about CDOs every day, can you just remind us what is a CDO and why was Michael Lewis focusing on this and on people like Chau?
Sure. So Chau founded this company called Harding Advisory, and what they did was manage collateralized debt obligations, CDOs. And these things are basically bundles of different types of debt, like mortgages. You put them all together, and then you divide them up into these slices based on risk, what they call tranches. And what The Big Short really focuses on, especially when it comes to Chau, is this idea that some of these CDO managers, they were incentivized to just create more and more of these things, often with riskier and riskier assets like subprime mortgages.
Right.
And the book suggests that the focus was on generating fees, doing more and more deals, and maybe not looking as closely at the risks as they should have. So basically, the idea is that people like Chau contributed to the whole system becoming really unstable.
Right. And Lewis, as we said, he didn't hold back.
Yeah.
So, we had these descriptions, fool, pilot of the ship of doom. But beyond just the name calling, were there more specific things that Chau and Harding Advisory said were false or defamatory in the book?
Yeah, I mean, those terms were definitely attention grabbing, but the lawsuit really zeroed in on more factual claims. One big one was this conversation that the book describes between Chau and this hedge fund manager, Steve Eisman. Eisman was actually betting against the housing market, and the book says that Chau told him that he had sold everything out as things started to go south. And the implication, and this is what the dissenting judge really focused on, was that Chau made a bunch of money by getting rid of these risky assets while other investors were left holding the bag and, lost a lot. There were also some more technical claims in the lawsuit about specific deals that Chau was involved in, whether he really understood how risky those mortgages and the CDOs were and, how much he was getting paid in fees. So it got pretty detailed.
Okay, so you've got these really strong opinions mixed in with what sound like factual statements. So let's talk law. What are the basics of defamation law, especially in New York, because that's where this case was decided, and how did the court apply that to what Chau was claiming?
Okay, so in New York, to win a defamation case, Chau had to prove a few things. First, Lewis had to have made a statement that was presented as fact, not just opinion.
Right.
Second, that fact had to be false. Third, it had to harm Chow's reputation. Fourth, it had to be specifically about him clearly identifying him. And finally, he had to show that he suffered some damages because of that statement.
Okay, and there's this concept that I think is really interesting. It's called substantial truth. It sounds like it gives writers, maybe journalists especially, a little bit of leeway.
Mm-hmm.
So what does that mean exactly?
Right. Substantial truth basically acknowledges that you might get some small details wrong in a story, but if the main point, the gist of what you're saying, is true, then it's not defamatory. Because, let's face it, it's hard to get every single detail perfect, especially when you're dealing with really complex topics.
Right.
So even if The Big Short had some minor inaccuracies about what Chow did or said, if the main point about his role in the CDO market, how that contributed to the crisis, if that was accurate, then Lewis could argue substantial truth as a defense.
Okay, that makes sense. And then there's this, I think, fundamental question of opinion versus fact. And in a book like The Big Short, which is full of strong opinions, how did the court decide what was opinion and what was fact?
So courts generally give a lot of protection to opinions.
Yeah, you got to be able to have opinions.
Right. Even if they're harsh or unflattering, because opinions can't really be proven or disproven. So in this case, the court looked at terms like fool and pilot of the ship of doom and said those were rhetorical hyperbole, which basically means exaggerated language. Opinion, not fact. And the test they use is whether a reasonable reader, understanding the context of the whole book, would think that those were statements of objective truth. So calling someone a fool is subjective, it's your opinion. But if you say Chow lied to investors, that's a factual claim that you could potentially be sued for.
Okay, and this case gets really interesting because the court decided that Chow, at least for this case, was a public figure. Why did they decide that, and what does that mean for how you prove defamation?
So they basically said that because he was so prominent in the CDO market, he managed huge amounts of money, he was operating in this very public financial arena. That made him a limited purpose public figure. And that's a big deal because it means he has a much higher burden of proof. Public figures have to prove actual malice, which means showing that Lewis either knew the statements were false when he wrote them or that he acted recklessly. Like, he just didn't care whether they were true or false. Yeah. And that's a really high bar to clear because, you know, we want to protect free speech,
yeah,
especially when it comes to public figures and issues of public interest.
Okay, so let's get to the decision.
All right.
The court, the majority of the judges, sided with Lewis, dismissed the lawsuit. What were the key points in their reasoning?
Okay, so the majority basically said, first of all, many of the things that Chow was complaining about, they were either protected opinion, like those colorful terms we talked about, or they were substantially true.
Okay.
Meaning that the gist of what Lewis wrote about Chow's role in the CDO market and the crisis, that was accurate.
Mm-hmm.
Then they also looked at this idea of whether the statements were really of and concerning Chow. They said even some of the criticisms that were directed at CDO managers as a group weren't necessarily specific enough to defame Chow as an individual. And they really emphasized that The Big Short was meant to be a broad critique of the whole financial system, not just a personal attack on Chow.
Right.
And finally, they said there just wasn't enough evidence to show actual malice.
Right. Okay, so what about this really specific claim that Chow had sold everything out? Because that seems like something that you could actually prove or disprove. How did the court deal with that one?
Yeah, so they did look at that statement specifically, but they put it in the context of the whole book.
Hmm.
And they said even if the exact wording wasn't perfectly accurate, the main point that Chow allegedly profited while others lost money because of these risky CDOs, that was substantially true. And again, they didn't see enough evidence that Lewis knew it was false or that he acted recklessly. They seemed to believe that Lewis was doing legitimate investigative journalism.
Interesting. It sounds like the court really looked at The Big Short as a whole, like the big picture, rather than getting bogged down in individual sentences. Why was that so important to their decision?
Yeah, context is crucial in defamation law because the way a statement is interpreted can really change depending on the words around it, the tone of the whole publication, and the overall message. So in this case, the court looked at The Big Short as a whole and said it was clearly meant to be about the systemic failures of the financial industry and the practices that led to the crisis.
Right.
And when you look at it that way, the criticisms of Chow are part of that bigger story, not just some isolated attack on him personally.
Right, but there was that one dissenting judge, right?
Yeah.
What did he disagree with?
Exactly. Judge Winter had a different take. He was mainly concerned that the majority dismissed the potential harm of some of those statements too quickly, especially that sold everything out statement. He said, when you look at that statement together with everything else the book says about Chow and the fact that investors in his CDOs lost a ton of money, a reasonable jury could conclude that Chow had done something fraudulent, or at least unethical.
Interesting.
He thought the context was important, but he also felt like the majority went too far in downplaying how those statements could directly hurt Chow's reputation. And he really felt like the question of how a reasonable reader would interpret all those statements together, that should have been decided by a jury, not just by the judge.
That's a really interesting point about how, you know, even if one statement on its own might not be defamatory, the combination of several statements could create a different impression.
Exactly. And I think Judge Winter was saying that even if each statement on its own might seem like an opinion or substantially true, together they could paint a really negative picture, a false picture that goes beyond just fair criticism.
So what does all this mean for our listeners? They're all, you know, future lawyers or law students. What can they learn from Chow v. Lewis?
Well, I think it's a great example of how courts try to balance free speech, especially when it comes to important public issues like finance and journalism, with the need to protect people's reputations from false attacks. We've seen how defamation law works, how you have to prove a false statement of fact that harms someone's reputation. And we've seen how important the concepts of substantial truth and the difference between opinion and fact are.
Right.
You know, like we said before, calling someone a fool is usually just an opinion, but saying something like Chow falsified financial documents, that would be a factual claim with serious legal implications.
Right, right.
And then there's this whole question of public figures and how that makes it even harder to win a defamation lawsuit. You have to prove actual malice, which is really tough.
Yeah.
And the court in this case really looked at the whole context of The Big Short. They said it was about the greed and the failures of a whole financial system, not just Chow. And even the colorful language, the rhetorical hyperbole, they said that was part of that larger commentary. Like, there's this one part where Lewis describes certain bonds as the equivalent of three levels of dog shit lower than the original bonds. You know, it's colorful, but it's not a factual statement that you can prove or disprove about Chow specifically.
Right. But, you know, that dissenting judge, he raised a really important point. Could all those statements together, especially that sold everything out statement, could they suggest fraud, even if no single statement said that directly? And that really shows how context can be interpreted in different ways, even by legal experts.
Exactly. And that's something to keep in mind as you study law. You know, where is the line between free speech and harm to someone's reputation, especially in fields like finance, where the stakes are so high? It's a question that doesn't always have easy answers, and that's what makes it so fascinating.
It does. It makes you think.
It does.
Great. Well, thanks for breaking that down.
Sure. Anytime.
And for our listeners, you know, this is just one case, but it raises so many important questions. So as you continue your legal journey, think about these issues. Think about where you think that line should be drawn. Because in today's world, with information moving so fast and opinions flying everywhere, this stuff is more relevant than ever.
Absolutely.
Okay, that's it for our deep dive today. We'll be back soon with another fascinating case.
Looking forward to it.